What's Trending?
What's Trending is presented by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu. Number one, the Royals off today. They're back at Kauffman to begin a homestand tomorrow night against the Baltimore Orioles. They lose their first two series of the season. They lost in extra innings yesterday to Milwaukee. They're 2-4, but so is the rest of the AL Central. We'll talk to Vern about the Royals coming up at 12:30. We'll also talk more about Cole Reagans and where this offense is at right now here in just a bit.
Yeah, it's not been a banner start on offense, and obviously they get an off day today. See if the Royals back at home on Friday can find a way to get a little more comfortable at the plate. Next up on What's Trending, the New England Patriots are sending quarterback Joe Milton to the Dallas Cowboys, according to ESPN. Cooper Rush headed to Baltimore. Dallas now has their new backup for Dak Prescott. You might remember last year, they traded for Trey Lance to be their backup quarterback. He has got to go down as one of the three worst picks in NFL history. I mean, I maybe can be talked into five. It's one of the worst quarterback picks of all time. He started five games in the NFL. He was the number three overall pick.
Got hurt.
And they
never
gave up like
again.
Three first round picks to get him.
Yeah,
got hurt, never played again. He's got to go down as one of the biggest fails.
He's
ever.
Up there. I mean, I think if we factor in the money that was paid to number one overall picks back in the day when the contracts weren't locked, slotted the way they are, Jamarcus Russell to me is still the biggest. There's a couple other names that come to mind for people. Akili Smith. You know, Ryan Leaf played a lot more, but he still was a massive, massive bust. But yes, Trey Lance is in the conversation. He's in the combo.
To be a third overall pick and to play five entire games as a starter in the NFL, that's crazy.
Next on What's Trending, the Chiefs are bringing back veteran safety Mike Edwards. Tom Pelissero reported that in the last hour or so. Remember, he was on the Chiefs 2 years ago, helped him win a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. He was on Tampa and Buffalo a year ago. I think it's a nice veteran to have in the safety room. Could also help them maybe in some run coverage, run stops, I should say, from the secondary. Nothing wrong with it, right? Small one-year deal.
Yeah, nothing crazy in that department. Chiefs like bringing back some old friends. Next up on What's Trending, another Kansas basketball player has joined the rest of the entire roster in the transfer portal. This time it's AJ Storr.
Good.
I am not kidding. Is there a player left on the Kansas basketball roster who was on the team last year? Not like, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. I'm asking a very serious question that is like guaranteed to be on their roster. Or has the entire roster
Jackson
now? Okay,
got,
Marco.
Yeah, there's
like,
a couple guys.
Or have they all officially entered the transfer portal?
Most of them have. AJ Storr, I'm glad he's in the portal. It just didn't work out. He needs to go somewhere else. He can go to a small school next year or something like that.
You know what? He's going to end up being a 20 point per game guy at some place like Xavier or Drake.
Yeah.
Or Marquette. Just like one of those like mid-majory schools. I imagine like with a ball handler, he could go back and be a big-time scorer for one of those schools.
Also on What's Trending, FIFA says the U.S. is poised to be the 2031 Women's World Cup host. We obviously know 2026 going to be in North America, right here in Kansas City, is going to host multiple matches next summer. But 2031, there's a chance the U.S. could host the Women's World Cup. Who knows where the sites would be and that kind of stuff, but just some news to keep an eye on in soccer world.
Lastly on What's Trending, don't forget our NFL draft party, this Thursday, 3 weeks from today, April 24th at the Landing at Liberty, your chance to win $965 by making those correct picks. We hope to see you all out there. Chris Unocero, Jay Binkley will be broadcasting live while you're out there getting those draft questions with those two who actually both be on the station tonight.
That's right. That's What's Trending here on Cody and Gold. Don't forget, we're in the lunch hour. Hope you're having a good start to your Thursday. And our lunch hour on a Thursday is sponsored by Jefferson's. New happy hour. If you haven't been there to check it out, it's going to save you some money. 7 days a week as well. Enjoy half off appetizers, half off your bar tab at Jefferson's. Whether it's the Lenexa location or up in North Kansas City, half off your bar tab at both locations. Jefferson's Wings, Burgers, and Oysters. We'll talk to Vern here in about 25 minutes about the Royals, but want to talk ourselves about Cole Reagans and then the offense. So Cole Reagans, as we thought he would, because I think he's done enough to show us he shouldn't be worried after one sharp or non-sharp outing on opening day. He looked like Cole Reagans from many games a year ago, 10 strikeouts. He was phenomenal. That's now his second outing. The starting rotation is lived up to what you were hoping it would be to this point. Michael Wacha, I'm sure, will also have a bounce back outing here fairly soon in a couple days this weekend against the Orioles. But the offense is still the big question six games in. Nothing through the first six games, I think, has been surprising at all. The starting pitching, for the most part, is what we thought. The bullpen as advertised. Doesn't mean there aren't some guys that haven't succeeded, but as Estevez and Urseg and even Harvey in limited action, they've done what you were hoping for this bullpen to flip and be a strength.
Yeah, I think so.
It looks like it's going to be a strength 6 games in. Offensively, we knew there were questions. Hey, on a night where Vinny and Salvi and Bobby aren't hitting, they might be in trouble. Well, that has shown up.
They've been in trouble. After Cole Reagan's start yesterday, the Royals team ERA from the starting pitching staffs, and this, remember, this is, we didn't think Cole Reagan's looked all that impressive in start one, nor did Seth Lugo look all that impressive in start one, and Waka didn't have a good day, and even still considering that cold, they have the 5th best team ERA from a starting pitching staff already this year. It's weird because essentially what we get out of yesterday's game is exactly what the concerns were going into it. I don't usually like, because this happened at left tackle for the Chiefs, and it's usually overly concerning when it shows its head immediately, which is, all right, we all know your biggest weakness going into the year is you can't hit. You can't hit in the outfield specifically, and you definitely can't hit essentially 6-9, maybe 5-9, depending on how you look at it. And then immediately we're like, wow, MJ's guessing, Renfroe can't hit, Kyle Isbell is still limited. We're throwing a bunch of infielders into the outfield to try to score some offense out of it. It has immediately showed its ugly head. That is a bit of a concerning to me. Now, if they can just float nearby everybody during this time, what's the worst case scenario? That they float around until they can get close enough to a trade deadline date to go find a corner outfielder? Maybe the number one thing you can always find in a trade deadline absent a relief pitcher. Corner outfielders are available, typically are. Lane Thomas, for instance, last year was available to the Guardians. So like they can go out and shop for that. I just don't like that it immediately showed up as like, yeah, I don't have anybody who can, they don't have a bat you trust in the outfield right now. I was kind of hoping Renfroe or MJ or somebody would start hot.
Yeah, there's a good chance that this is what it's going to be a majority of the year. It's also 6 games in. And if it was a 6 game stretch in June, you know, people aren't talking about it as much. But that's the reality of how the sport works. We recognize that. I just think none of this should be like surprising, which is why I'm not going to overreact on the positive or the negative end. You know, like that's just where I'm at with this team.
You're going to be pretty even right now.
Yeah,
no, they're playing exactly the way we thought they could play to win. They just haven't won one less game. If they were 3-3, I don't even know that we'd be.
I mean, yeah, you don't want to be 2-4. You would have liked to have won a series, but one of your first 2 series of the year. But it's just the way they're going about it. A month ago, you would have probably have agreed if the outfield is not performing and Bobby and Vinny and Sally have a bad day at the office. If I would have told you, yeah, they're probably not going to score many runs, you would have said, oh yeah, that makes sense. Well, that's what's happened. That's what's happened the last 2 nights.
Yeah. It's going, I don't know. It's going to plan, I guess. I understand like when you're 2-4, that's not the plan, but the idea that they got like 4 relievers with a 0 earned run average, all the guys you want, right? Estevez, Urseg, Hunter Harvey, Daniel Lynch, like the guys you're going to lean on. And there's a few guys at the back end struggling some, but might still have the upside like Zerpa. I'm not going to freak out over that possibility as it sits right now. And as we pointed out earlier in the show, no one in the AL Central is exactly running away with it 6 games into the season. They're all tied for first or last, depending on how you want to look at it. Every single team in the AL Central as of this second is 2-4. Do any of them play today? Royals are off and most of baseball is off today.
Can somebody go snag
first place today?
Astros and Twins play today.
Okay. So the Twins could be alone in first place after today,
right.
You know?
That's right.
I don't know. Maybe some of this is the coming back to earth of the American League Central or my unwillingness to be, you can win with pitching and I know that. And I know that the hit errors won't hit like this the entire year. You can win with the way you're pitching right now. With the bullpen and the starting pitching, you can win a lot of games doing exactly what you're already doing. So if I'm going to panic about 1/3 of the ball, which historically should perform a little bit better. I don't think Bobby Jr. is going to hit 240 the entire year. Something tells me that they'll probably be okay the rest of the time. And so maybe not again. You and I never thought they were going to be some world beater offense. I think that's maybe also where we are. So mediocre offenses can look bad more often because they're mediocre offenses. They're the 10th best, 12th best, 15th best, whatever. What do they score? They were the 6th most in runs per game last year, but that was kind of a misnomer. They were more like 15th in a lot of statistical categories. That's where I think they'll land eventually. Maybe they're really missing Dairon Blanco. Consider that.
I don't think that is. I don't think that is the problem. No,
Homer's fast.
I mean, he is. I think ultimately, again, it's just, you know, you're gonna not get the production we thought, they're getting the same production we unfortunately thought could happen into the outfield with Renfroe and Melendez. That's happening, and then to this point, Bobby hasn't got out of the first 6 hot. Vinny had a first weekend series that was nice, but he hasn't done a whole lot here in the last two games. And I feel so weird even saying some of this stuff
because it's six games.
It is the seventh game of the year is tomorrow. Today is a week into the season. Opening day was last Thursday. So yes, that's why like we had these conversations last year. You're gonna be hard pressed to get me to freak out or call for someone to be demoted or anything like that. 6 days into the MLB season. That's crazy.
The only problem is the Royals right away, and this is not something the fear, I think, with Royals fans always comes down to one base fear, which has been I know it doesn't relate to this year because they're not the same team, but it goes down to the base fear that is the same thing, which is how many times you've watched this team play themselves out of a playoff spot somehow in the first 30 days.
But I said this on opening day last Thursday. We were out at the K and we were wrapping up the show. And I said, I do think this current regime and majority of this roster is the same as a year ago. That what they did last year, we should not have the same panic reaction if they get off to a slow start. I said it last week and here they are. They're 2-4. Like I understand last year or 2 years ago when they got off to a bad start, you've been like, oh, okay, well, it's going to be a bad year. I totally get that sentiment. I was right there with you guys. I think this group, though, and this regime should earn a little bit more trust in the first month, let alone 6 days of the season that, okay, all right, and, you know, 2-4. Yeah, like this group was a playoff team. A majority of the roster is the same.
Huge
so,
chunk, yeah.
No, it's a different conversation if it's June, guys, and this team is still, then, okay, that's different, or end of May or something. But
they're
six games in the year. Let's just calm down.
I did go ahead and look up. Last year, they started 3-4.
Yeah.
So in their first seven games, they started below 500. The Royals would have to win the next two games in a row in order to start that way, but they started 3-4. Then they ripped off seven in a row. It is always kind of hard because you remember last year and you're like, when did I know the Royals were for real? And I think it was right after that. That's what's always kind of rare where like a team tells you right away, like, are the Royals going to be like, you're watching Bobby play, you're like, Oh, wait, they might actually be like a team that's got some juice. I would love to just see that somewhere in the first 6 weeks. Now, six games in, I don't need to see it in the first six games. I just like to have that moment where you're like, okay, this team's got the same juice last year's team's got. But I told you earlier, like we're talking about the pitching. The pitching is still there. They got the fifth best team ERA in the starting pitching. They got like the ninth best overall ERA. Like I see the pieces. All of it works. It's just, can they hit tonight? And I don't think the fact that MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfroe are ice cold and quite bad at the moment is going to be the true story of the offense the entire year.
I saw Dusty left his notepad or sheet of notes, and it was about, I'm reading it, it says these are his notes from Renfroe and Melendez. And 14 at-bats for Renfroe, two hits on the year, 143 average. MJ, 14 at-bats, one hit. Was that a 91.091 average? Combined, .107. Hitting 107, I should say. 3 RBI, 8 strikeouts, 28 at-bats. Yeah, obviously. But
going to guess Kyle Isbell's probably hitting like 150.
But again, I think, those are numbers that are obviously simply not good enough. But you're not ever going to be relying on Melendez and Renfroe.
No.
And so
to win games, you're going to be relying on the four guys we've mentioned 1,000 times. Yeah. And at least now it's four. Last year, it was three. Last year, in order to have a good day at the offensive scoreboard goal, we were talking about three guys having a good, at least it's four now, right? It appears India belongs in that conversation to you.
Yes. Yeah. We'll talk more about this with Vern 15 minutes or so from now. Our Royals insider, off day for him. He's back at it tomorrow when the Royals open up their weekend series against the Baltimore Orioles. All right. So the NFL draft is 3 weeks from tonight in Green Bay, round one. We've talked about our draft party at the Landing. And it sounds like there's one team with one star player that maybe has upset their star player based on how they handled the last couple of days. I'm talking about Trey Hendrickson. And this is something that we're going to keep an eye on because it's on an AFC team. It's on a potential contender. It's a top lineman that maybe, just maybe, could still be on the move come draft day. We'll see, although every indication prior to this little week of silly comments from the Bengals would indicate that they're going to retain him. But you had Trey Hendrickson sounding kind of upset with Cincinnati for how they kind of had handled things. And I don't see the audio cut, Drew, in there. But so
it says it was in the system.
It is in the system.
I can't find it.
Maybe didn't get moved.
I can't find it. It's in there somewhere. Okay. I was trying to play the audio of Trey Hendrickson. I couldn't find it.
How about I play it right now for you? Here's what Trey Hendrickson had to say.
Well, I mean, whenever we have something to resolve in my family, my wife and I, we discuss it and we get to the point where we know we're reaching a decision, you know, and I've been open and transparent about however it looks for me in Cincinnati or not. I want the Bengals to benefit from that. And through this process, you know, communication, when I say it's been poor, it's been like, here and there, you know, and respect to Jamar and T. I don't want to take anything away from all the great things they've accomplished in their careers. They deserve everything that they've gotten. And no doubt in my mind, they're going to excel in the National Football League. I have a tremendous respect for both of them. But when it comes to my situation, it would have been nice to know, you know, in some ways, like, hey, we're going to, you know, put you in the queue.
Put you in the queue, right? So, like, part of it is he's upset. He's like, hey, why didn't you tell me I was behind both Jamar Chase and T. Higgins? First, he should have known he was behind Jamar in the pay scale part of the system. But if you listen to the comments that their executive vice president or whatever.
Katie Blackburn
executive
vice president, yep.
He should be pissed.
Yes, agreed.
She said he should just be happy with the money we offer him and nothing else matters.
Yeah.
Whoops. Is he going to end up being a Cincinnati Bengal? Okay,
what a Bengals comment, by the way. What a comment. You knew that would come from the Bengals. If it was an anonymous person, you could take a guess that it was the Bengals and you would be correct. I would say he is going to still be there. Because, again, he technically is under contract. He might hold in or hold out, but he'll be on the roster. I don't think they would.
You sure? But that means he's going to be a free agent next year. You agree then?
I mean, unless they can get a deal done, yeah.
But, like, I'm not saying, like, people haven't ever spoke negatively and then still got a deal done. I just watched that with Myles Garrett. I'm not blind to the idea that a person can be annoyed
money
at
talks,
their organization,
money
and money does talk in the end. But this was the whole point we talked about before. Where is Cincinnati? What is their long-term plan? Because they were bad on defense, and in a year, at best, maybe, at the current pace, they're not even going to have their best defensive player. Then what? Then what do you do?
Yeah, they're not. If you want to consider them to be a contender, they have to have Trey Hendrickson. If they trade him and they get a guy in the first round, they're not a legit contender because you're losing, you know, 18 sacks or whatever he put up last year. I think it was 18 and a half, whatever it is. But for him to say that they haven't been transparent is annoying. I think even further in the conversation with Pat McAfee, he said they hadn't even really been in touch with his agent directly. Like, they had gone through different ways of speaking. They didn't speak directly to them. They went through somebody else to speak to them, which I think is disrespectful to Trey. I can understand why he's mad, and he has a good reason to be.
Why would you not talk to the agent directly? Like, I did see Jerry Jones try to dismiss Myles Garrett agent, or not, or
Micah Parsons.
Micah Parsons agent too.
Mm-hmm. And I'm the one that writes the checks.
Yeah.
The Jerry Jones comment for sure.
Like, it's always just a good reminder: dysfunctional organizations do dysfunctional things. Like, the thing to always remember, and Cincinnati, Drew, and this is why I don't take them serious as a contender. Not that they don't have talent. They've had talent for years. They've had one of the better quarterbacks for years now in their organization. They are, at its core, a dysfunctional group of people who do not function. And so because of that, they just make stupid decisions and get in little fights. Or, honestly, pay T. Higgins is what I think bad teams do versus try to just make it work with the number one or number two or number three wide receiver in the NFL and the number three, four quarterback in the NFL or whatever he is, right? Like, it's that part of it that you've got to, like, they're just a poorly run team.
If they, regardless of what happened with T. Higgins, if they lost Trey Hendrickson, they were going to be screwed in the first place anyways. I think that in terms of importance, Jamar Chase and Trey Hendrickson were the most two important deals to get done. The way that T. Higgins' agent, who's also Jamar Chase's agent, worked out is they were a combo deal where they were always going to get T. Higgins done, I believe. Now, they can't get Trey Hendrickson done because based on what Trey says, he didn't even want to be the highest paid defensive line. He didn't even want to be the highest paid guy in the league. So they could get away with $30 million, 32. And it sounds like he wants to be there because he likes the city that much. I mean, he even said, even if he's traded, he wants the Bengals to get something from it. He cares about the franchise, which, again, why you wouldn't sign him and bring him back makes absolutely no sense when a guy cares that much that he'd be willing to get traded so that you benefit and you get something for him. Like, that's crazy for a player, I think, to think about.
Yeah, if only his quarterback cared about him as much as he does his other teammates, you know? He was so worried about making sure Jamar and T got paid, he forgot about his buddy Trey Hendrickson.
Sure,
you know?
Has he said anything publicly about Trey?
Hang on. He said Trey Hendrickson, he said they need to pay Trey Hendrickson as well when he was doing the media rounds. He said it. He said they have
the capabilities.
He sure
made sure his wide receivers got taken care of.
I will say this.
You know?
If they do pay Trey Hendrickson, then everything that I've been saying and everything that everybody else said was correct. And the fact that they can pay all three guys, and they will pay all three guys.
You would be right there. And I didn't think they ever would pay. I didn't mean that like they didn't have the financial means. But I never thought they would pay all three guys. I still don't think they should have paid T. I could end up being way wrong on this. As it sits right now, they are the identical team that missed the playoffs last year. Like, there's no, they're right a team now, who can score and can't play defense. They had Trey Hendrickson at, I don't know, how many would he have? Like 18 sacks last year?
18 and a half. He led the league.
He also, things are different. I've never heard anybody ever say they actually want to live in the city of Cincinnati before in my life. So he's got that going for him as well.
He loves it there.
I've never heard anybody say that.
Love Cincinnati?
From the 8-1-6, Drew is down bad. Of course. You were down bad when the Chiefs stunk too, I'm sure. The Bengals missed the playoffs. I've seen way worse years than this. Believe me, I've seen way worse.
If you've been a Cincinnati fan your whole life, yeah, for sure.
I've seen way worse.
Pretty much anything pre-Burrow was worse.
Correct. I mean, Andy Dalton. I'm still convinced Andy Dalton was better for the Bengals organization than Carson Palmer. Not as good as a quarterback, but he was better in terms of everything that he brought to the table than what Carson Palmer
did. I think
did.
Achilles Smith was better for that city.
Smith was a big bust.
He's like the only guy I'm entertaining being worse than Trey Smith at this point.
No, Trey Lance.
Trey Lance. Smith, not Trey. Sorry, I was thinking about that as comments on Trey Lance.
Trey Lance.
Wait, who?
Trey Lance, the worst. One of the worst. We were actually, before the show, we were kind of going back and forth trying to figure out which quarterbacks were worse than that pick, factoring in everything. Where they were selected, how much money they made, how many games they started. And I don't know. Like, after all that, I think it's indisputable that Trey Lance is one of the three worst quarterbacks taken in the NFL draft's history. Third overall pick.
He's a top five bust.
Made five starts. Like, he's the guy who's made the lowest starts out of any of the other
I think
busts.
Gold's right, though. I think it's Jamarcus Russell. I think Jamarcus Russell is the all-time.
He got paid, too.
And Steven also still, has an all-time
I
ran on
I still
Jamarcus
think I put
well.
Ryan Leaf higher. I understand he played more games.
Was it the Peyton Manning? Is it like that comparison part two that adds to it?
It was whatever. Like, look, if you trade up, the Niners obviously love Trey Lance. You don't trade up and trade picks if you didn't love him. But I still don't think the narrative, because he was a kid from North Dakota State and everything, I don't think the narrative around Trey Lance was the same as what it was for some of these other guys. Like, look, the Niners thought he was a franchise dude. I don't think the national common thought, if you will, majority opinion, I guess is what I should say, on Trey Lance was that, oh my gosh, this guy has a chance to be, you know, one of the not just a franchise quarterback, but maybe one day end up being viewed as one of the better quarterbacks in the league. Yeah. Ryan Leaf, that was what people thought he was going to be, not just a good quarterback, but a great quarterback.
He deserves,
same with Jamarcus Russell.
I think if you take someone third overall, like, you think they're going to be great, but I agree with you that probably the hype is going into it. But this is why I don't understand these lists include guys like Sam Bradford. Trey Lance would sell his left kidney to have Sam Bradford's career. He started like 100 games in the league.
Didn't Sam
I'm
Bradford
not saying Sam
like
Bradford is a good quarterback. He definitely wasn't.
Bradford was the last quarterback that was the pre-slot value, right? Like, now the picks are slotted. You can negotiate language, but the dollar amount's kind of the dollar amount wherever you get drafted for the most part. Back then, if you're the first overall pick, you could really bump that number up and get paid immediately.
A list Dusty sent me earlier had Sam Darnold on. I'm like, no, he probably got rid of that.
It's not Darnold anymore.
He's not
Geno Smith.
Bust anymore.
Not Geno Smith,
not Geno
anymore,
Smith anymore. And he was a second round pick. If you're in the second round or later, get off my list. You're not like
Tim Couch.
I mentioned this name like 2 months ago. John Beck, who got taken in the second round. I don't know if he ever even started a game in the NFL. He's not one of the worst picks ever. He's taken in the second round.
You gotta be like a top five, top 10 pick.
Yeah. Brody Croyle doesn't count. He's taken in the third round. Yeah, I agree with you. Top 10 to 15 pick is all I'm entertaining.
Up next, our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, are going to join us. Find out how he thought the first two series of the season went and just where should everybody be at, perhaps on the offense right now. That's coming up next right here on Cody and Gold. Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We'll get to the random question of the day here in about 12 minutes or so. Let's talk some more Royals baseball. Our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, joins us as he does normally each and every Wednesday. But, of course, there was some day baseball yesterday, so he's kind enough to talk to us here on a Thursday. Vern, six games in, now a week since opening day. I don't feel like anything that has happened should be surprising to anybody. Like, the starting pitching is been pretty decent. The bullpen looks like it can be a strength, and we know the questions that we have about the offense, and all that stuff is happening six games in.
Yeah. To me, the only thing that would strike me as surprising, maybe the fact that this rotation, while they've given you a chance to win five of the six games, they certainly are not performing poorly, but they're not giving you the length that you saw last season. But there can't be trends a week into the season, right? It's six separate games. But if I had to say something surprising me is, on average right now you're getting five innings per start. And last year that's how this team bullied opponents, right? It was rotation, defense, base running, and the big three in the lineup. And maybe that's the recipe once again this season. Although, as I say that, if there's something else that has surprised me is Kyle Isbell having a rough go defensively in one game, a poor decision base running, aggressive mistake base running. Rotation, defense, and base running along with Bobby, Salvi, and Vinny is how you won 86 games last season. And like I've talked about with the sophomore album, it's not as easy to find that magic on the that you had on the debut album, because is the defense going to be one of the two best in all of Major League Baseball? Will the base running be one of the five best in Major League Baseball? Will the rotation not just be good, but be the second best unit in the American League, a top five unit in Major League Baseball? I hope so, but let's not take for granted just how good all three of those facets were a season ago.
What do you think it is about the offense in particular, Vern? Only six games into the season. Is it just, like, I guess, what are the signs you were seeing? Some of it, I guess, the frustrating part is the not getting home runs that you're, or getting runs you're supposed to get home, right? As in, it's a guy on second with nobody out, you're supposed to get him home, or if it's a guy on third with less than two outs. Seems more situational stuff that's bothering me more than just, I'd like more hits out of Hunter Renfroe and MJ Melendez.
Yeah, I really, again, I don't think there is a common theme through six separate games. You look at the opener, they lose in extras to Cleveland offensively. Unable to get that run home in the 10th inning. Bobby Witt Jr. comes to the dish with a man in scoring position there, and he lines out to center field. I didn't have an issue with the offense back on opening day. I didn't have an issue with them yesterday losing to a guy like Freddie Peralta, Tanner Bibee in the finale to Cleveland. I didn't think the offense performed poorly in that loss. The game two in Milwaukee.
Ooh,
sure. Yeah. Getting shut out by a kid making his first ever big league start. Okay. But in that game, there was no Vinny Pasquantino, and I don't need to remind you guys of what this team looked like the last time Vinny wasn't in the lineup, last September, when all of the good things this team did in 2024 almost went down the drain as Vinny busted up that thumb. All we have to do is go off of track record, and right now the track record of everybody not named Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi, and Jonathan India would tell you that the negative things that you're seeing is more likely to play out over the course of 162, but that's what April baseball's about. It's giving a guy like MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfroe and Michael Garcia and Kyle Isbell and Michael Massey, here's your opportunity in 2025 to show that last year was either the truth or an aberration, and you're going to turn it around this season. But once that calendar flips to May, then it's time to adjust. Right now, you sit back and watch and wait for trends to emerge, but that certainly does not happen in six games.
What are your early impressions of the revamped bullpen? I said I'm highly encouraged. Like, I feel like the depth can already be felt here early on versus what I thought they possessed in that category last year. I thought it was just as bad as a lineup last year. It's like maybe one or two guys, and then you didn't want to go any further back than that. What do you think about the early returns on the bullpen?
Yeah, you have to be happy. Estevez, Urseg, Harvey have combined to limit opponents to 2 for 26. 9 up, 9 down for Harvey. Urseg has faced 7 batters and recorded seven outs. Daniel Lynch has the fourth longest scoreless streak in history of Royals relief pitching. So, yeah, things are going well. But as I mentioned at the beginning, the length or lack thereof compared to what we saw from this group a season ago, a bullpen's only as good as its rotation allows it to be. Urseg's a stud. Harvey's a stud. Esteves is a stud. I believe Zerpa's better than what we've seen so far this season. But if they're overused, then they'll all be middle of the road to a bad bullpen by the end of the season. So, yes, very happy, very encouraged, hoping that they can help alleviate some of the burden that is on the shoulders of those five starting pitchers. But let's not get anything twisted. It appears, once again, the way that this team's going to stand apart from its competitors in the division and round Major League Baseball is with Reagans and Lugo, Waka, Lorenzen, and Bubich. These dudes need to, at times, put the team on their back and allow Bobby, India, Vinny, and Salvi to do their part, and that ultimately being enough.
And this is not why they lost the game yesterday, but have you ever seen a worse balk call than the one against Carlos Esteves?
No, and it's shocking that that didn't cost them the game. The fact that Esteves was able to work through that with the help of Salvi and Freddie Fermin, a pair of catchers, tag team and the Brewers there. No, that it was almost as if John Tumpane wanted to call a balk. I mean, for a guy that's been around so long, I thought it was poor court awareness, right? I mean, it's extra innings, and this is where you're going to have that nitpick call of a balk. Yeah, I thought that was real weak.
It was like, also, I guess they've got some history. Does he not like the Royals for some reason? That's what it seemed like the consensus, I guess, was on social media, Vern.
Yeah, well,
they got beef.
Social media.
I don't think. They don't have beef. I know him and Q have screamed at one another before. I believe he's thrown Q out in the past. But managers fight with every umpire, but there's a mutual respect. So no, I don't think he was, rekindling some old flame with the Brewers organization, with the Royals organization.
I'll ask you about some of the other, like the division and stuff here in just a minute, but I want to go back to a guy you mentioned in the bullpen, Daniel Lynch. I don't feel like he's getting the attention I would expect for a guy who's only six innings away from Wade Davis's consecutive scoreless inning streak. Should we be talking about more about his dominance?
Well, they are a little different. Wade was pitching in huge moments. Daniel Lynch yesterday, that was probably the biggest moment he's pitched in over the course of this scoreless streak, right? Wade's getting the ball to close out games. Last season, Daniel Lynch was, you know, fifth, sixth inning type of guy. We'll see next time a lefty steps to the dish in a tie game, in a close game. Does Q go to Lynch before he goes to Angel Zerpa? Zerpa had the opportunity yesterday in a tie game, seventh inning, with the lefty Garrett Mitchell coming to the dish. And, you know, Zerpa did not get the job done. He was bailed out by the defense of Jonathan India and the right arm of Lucas Urseg. But when Mitchell came to the dish again, when there were two lefties due up in the ninth, that was Lynch's opportunity, and he needed just 16 pitches to retire the side. Again, just like I said with the hitting, same with the bullpen, and you guys know this. That's what April is about. Who can handle what in 2025? Just because you were this guy in 2024 honestly has no bearing on 2025. So if, you know, Zerpa, who has fumbled, I think, in every one of his outings so far this season, and Daniel Lynch has done just the opposite, again, we're six games in. I can't imagine that roles have flipped in two series, but we get towards the end of April, and yeah, maybe Daniel Lynch does climb up that ladder and find himself in that four spot behind the big three at the back end of Esteves, Urseg, and Hunter Harvey.
Vern, at least the nice thing is nobody, it's not like the Dodgers exist in this division. There's not an 8-0 team.
Oh, my God. The Padres are 7-0 when they're a half game back.
Yeah, and the Braves are 0-7. I mean, it could be worse, guys. Yeah. It could be way worse in the AL Central.
No question. And listen, the concerns about the offense, and I understand where they come from. Although, one of the bats that was targeted this offseason, thank God the Royals didn't sign Jurickson Profar and have to pay that guy $15 million next year and $15 million the year after that, then you wouldn't have his services in the postseason. Honestly, Santander, Profar, the Royals swung and missed at both of them, and honestly, I think I might be happy with that. Overpaying Santander and blocking Vinny or Caglione down the line, paying for a steroid guy that had his breakout year at the age of 31, I think I'm happy with the $22 million given to Carlos Estevez. There's no doubt that it could be worse, and you're seeing the Royals sacrifice defense for offense, right? We talked about this in spring training with Mike Hell in center and India at third, India in left. Not that he's been a butcher, but I think over time, you'll continue to see mistakes like you saw at Kauffman Stadium in that series against Cleveland. So again, it brings me back to, what is the identity of this team? They're unlikely to be led by the offense. Okay, so what facet allows you to bully or stand superior to your foes in the American League Central? If we're going to sacrifice defense for the betterment of the offense, I don't love the sound of that. Base running, boy, it really seems, again, like it all comes down to those Cole Reagan, Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha starts. If you want to put Chris Bubich in that mix, you go right ahead with that performance that he gave us. But it certainly does seem, six games in, it's impossible to see a trend. But the rotation right now, where the guys that I'm looking at, along with those top four hitters, you guys need to lead this team to a victory. And if you don't, I can't pretend to be disappointed when Renfro and Biggio don't come through.
Last one, Vern, since you mentioned Jerks and Profar, should Major League Baseball just at least put one rule in that you can void a contract if they test positive? He catfished them. He was on a dating website this offseason.
Well, that's their own fault.
He put up.
He was 31 and just had a career year.
But he's
that
like,
guy hasn't been able to stay healthy.
He's get all of his money over the next 2 years. He'll get all of his
and
cash, even though he was cheating.
It did, yeah. He got paid. I mean, this is where it's like,
I would have cheated to get the money. Don't get me wrong.
They don't have to pay half of his contract this year, but they have to pay the rest of it this year and all of it next year and all of it the year after that.
Yeah, why do you think these guys have been taking them for years throughout the sport?
I don't think there is any way to protect an organization because, as you know, organizations are quite shady as well, right? Owners. We've seen collusion before. I wouldn't be surprised if someone's not performing and they go, hey, Hunter Dozier's blood just turned up with some PEDs. We're going to take all that money back. So, no, the union and the – no, that will – they can't agree on anything. They're not going to agree on a way to take your money from you.
Yeah, that's true.
Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. He joins us each and every Wednesday normally throughout the baseball season. Appreciate it, man. Enjoy the rest of the afternoon, and we'll check in next week.
Sounds good. Thank you.
You got it. And, of course, his On Deck show tomorrow when the Royals open up this series against the Orioles out at Kauffman Stadium right here on 96.5 The Fan. Yeah, the steroid thing. It's true, though. Like, if you're pro – I mean, the reason Miguel Tejada did this, like, plenty of players.
Oh, it's worth it, yeah.
I mean, like, the trade-off – I mean, like, yes, your name is tarnished and all – no doubt, right? And you're a cheater and all that is true.
But you get $50 million to cheat.
You know, I mean, how many – let's be real. Like, how many people, if I told you the trade-off was that? I mean, come on.
If you told me even right now at my age, you're like, all right, we can teach you to throw 100, but you got to take a bunch of steroids. And
now,
if you're
going to
get caught,
players,
there's $50 million, all the steroids. Let's go ahead and do it, fellas.
Now, there are some players I don't get why they did it. Like, Barry Bonds would have had an unbelievable career without –
he's going to be Hall of Famer.
Yeah, like, so there's some players like, why? Why? You know, like, they're but if you're a French guy, like Profar, and I don't know if French
like
maybe
Alex
is not
Rodriguez
fair, but
would have been a great player if he had just never touched a steroid, but he
that I
resist.
Don't understand. You were going to get the big payday anyway. But the guy that is trying to get his first big payday in the majors, I mean, I get the – I guess I get the temptation is all I'm saying. But, yeah, the Braves are definitely furious with Profar for the situation that they're in. And they're also just off to a terrible start. They're 0-7.
Yeah, they're really bad. Really, really bad.
Random question.
The World Series, man. Next up are on What's Trending, brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Results every week and then receive free support for life online at Awaken180WeightLoss.com. Of course, for you, Gold and Drew, on the text line, 913-586-7965. Also, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook, you can like and subscribe us over there. We'll interact with you. You get a chance to subscribe so you can see it right at the top of your page. I want to ask a follow-up to something we kind of got into a touch yesterday. We only had 60 minutes to do a show, so we didn't have a lot of time to get into it. The Nintendo Switch 2 was announced yesterday by Nintendo. The question I have as it relates to this are two things that I'm curious about that I think, are they enough to convince you to do it or they're doing? The first big question I have is, have they officially priced themselves out of your interest? So the Nintendo Switch 2, if you missed it, is going to cost, with Mario Kart, so you have a game, $500 if you pre-order it, and each game will cost $80 for a digital copy or $90 for a physical copy of said game. So the question I have for you first, and then we'll talk about some of the features, is have they priced themselves out? Are we out on buying our kids a Nintendo Switch? Yeah, out on buying one yourselves, knowing that a game will cost you $90 if you want the physical copy?
So, look, everything's gone up, and so priced out, I mean, for some people, of course, right? I mean, there's always a price at some point. I think what has changed for me is I always viewed the Nintendo Switch and, frankly, any of the Nintendo consoles as the cheaper console. Like, you could get it much, you know, it's great for kids and you can get in a lot cheaper.
But you're paying more for like a PS5 or something.
500? Yeah. I mean, I'm not far off from just getting, and I'm not saying that the Switch isn't great. I've considered getting one, but, like, I can get a PS5. I can get an Xbox for the same price now, depending on the exact console SKU we're discussing. That's what has changed, man. And Nintendo knows that they'll have a market. I mean, the pre-orders, we all know the pre-orders are going to sell out within 5 minutes, within 10 minutes. Next week, the 7th or 9th of this month?
Yeah, that's pretty early. Something like that. They have up until the 15th, or maybe it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's the Nintendo-only pre-order for a first week, and then, like, retailers will begin their pre-orders. Because they're trying to do stuff to keep scammers out of it. Like scalpers, right? The people who are trying to like resell these things, and you have to like already have a Nintendo Online membership, prove that you've had one for at least a year. There's like steps in order to
pre-order.
In order to pre-order, you have to have had a Nintendo Online membership before, and have
even through Best Buy they're making
and actively no that, oh, the retailers
oh, okay. saying it
for
first.
The Nintendo only one, the okay. one that's a week oh. long.
Okay,
you have
okay.
to have so meet to some benchmarks. The so they're trying to get the you know the people who are ripping off sneakers too, right?
Gotcha.
They're trying to keep the people who are buying it just to like jack up the price in the secondary market where it's already nuts.
I'm not necessarily inclined to buy one. I will say this. I saw the trailer for the Mario Kart World. It looks pretty sweet.
No, it looks great.
I will say this. I have a PlayStation. I know, Gold, you have an Xbox. As a PlayStation owner, I'm a little bit irritated to see that games are being charged now $80, potentially $90.
Because that means it's coming for
you
PlayStation.
You know that they're essentially resetting the market for cost of games, I think, going forward.
I mean, an argument probably is that development costs have gone up too, right?
But dude,
Of course. That's the argument.
The one thing I'll make an argument for it is that $90 sounds crazy, but if you think about what things cost over time, I can get, like, I remember specifically my brother saving up for it. One of my favorite games growing up was Ken Griffey Jr. Baseball on the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. And they had to save up to buy it. And that game then on Super Nintendo in the 90s was $65. Like, it wasn't 40 or 30. It was $65 then. Honestly, this is probably a market correction. Look, do I want every time my kid wants a game to try to shell out $90? No, they're going to be like
it's
birthdays 90
for
and Christmas.
Physical, right? Digital's 80.
But we're down to birthdays and Christmases for new games, though, out of reality.
The thing, though, Cody,
if it's $80, you can't even ask for it for like a kid's birthday party. Like, if you're inviting his friends, you can't ask a fellow parent to spend $80.
The thing that you were able to do, though, in the 90s, in the early 2000s, you were able to rent the game before buying it if you really wanted to. Or there would be games that I would rent to see, is it worth asking my parents to spend $60 for this game? Where if you spend $80 and the game stinks, you essentially waste $80 because you can't trade it in if it's digital or anything like that, and it's just there.
All that is true, but I will say this is where the Switch got it right. The single best thing that they did as part of this thing is what you're talking about exists now in a way. The Nintendo Switch will allow you to lend a digital copy of a game
to
someone.
That's great.
So, like, you say, I don't know if I want to play the show on Switch. Mm-hmm. I can loan it to you for an up to 30-day time period in which you'd get a chance to play it.
Now, what's the limit? Is there a way, like,
I think it's a limited number of users probably you're allowed to share.
I'm wondering, like, is there just a money-making opportunity for somebody? Like, there's no Best Buy, there's no Blockbuster anymore. Is there a way, and I think there's still, like, Gamefly, maybe that still exists. But to Drew's point about renting, with this lend the game featured thing on the Switch, is there a way for you to, could you buy, let's just hypothetically, buy 20 versions of the MLB The Show?
And just turn into your own personal library?
And like rent it out to people?
That I don't know.
I'm guessing that breaks the terms and conditions.
I mean, if you bought 100 copies, I don't think they care. You're loaning them out to 30 games at a time. Like, if I want to become my own individual Blockbuster, because that's like, you mentioned the physical copy of the game, Drew. That's why I'll pay the $10. I'll pay the $10 because I want my kids to be able to loan a game to a friend or get loaned a game from a friend. Because that is a great way to like save the money. I got Mario Kart. Can I trade you for the show? Can we play each other? Like, especially when they get older. My kids at 6 and 8 aren't borrowing games like that. But you guys remember, dude, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old.
Oh, yeah.
That was key, borrowing somebody's Xbox game, PlayStation game, being mad that they put your Tekken game in the wrong case or whatever.
Especially now that we're going to digital. Yeah. Like, there's no way to trade back in games. There's no way to do anything digital-wise. Where I think being able to lend, that's something that I wish that going forward, PlayStation, Xbox maybe could take a play out of the playbook of hey, you've got the new... Like somebody mentioned, you know, the new Grand Theft Auto game is coming out. Like, if I don't want to spend the $100 or whatever it's going to cost to get it, can I borrow it for you for 5 days, play it for a week, see if I like it or not, or just play it for a week because that's all I want to do is just play it for a week and have some fun, and you can have it back.
My kid is not.
I like the concept.
He loves the Nintendo.
He doesn't know yet. Super Mario Odyssey. He doesn't know yet is what it is. Wait till the TV commercials pop up.
Well, in fairness, he turned on his Nintendo yesterday to play Super Mario Odyssey.
Right there.
Front and center. Nintendo Switch 2!
Yeah.
Oh, don't you worry. They'll advertise to him. No question he'll find. If he doesn't know about the Nintendo Switch 2 yet, he will. He also, like most kids this age now,
it's gonna be
he
such
watches
a popular
YouTube.
Present next December. My
he'll goodness. Like he'll play Super Mario Odyssey. He'll go get some Power Moon in that, which is the same thing as like Stars or whatever, and like other Mario iterations. And he'll be like, I saw a guy do that on YouTube. Like he'll already. So like somebody he watches on YouTube is going to talk about the Nintendo Switch 2. So it's
comes out in June.
Yeah, his birthday's in August.
June 5th,
so
right?
If I wanted,
perfect,
like,
Cody. Perfect.
If I wanted the easy layup, well, then should I just be... I don't want
You can trade it in for... You can trade, I think. You get $175
I told you yesterday. You tell
him
if you want it, we're trading in the Switch now. No Switch for a couple months, but we'll use it towards the new one.
He's got to go cold turkey for the next 3 months.
Does he want the new one?
I don't know. He hasn't said anything yet. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not bringing it up.
Yeah. All right. That's the random question of the day. Up next, something has happened twice during Brett Veach's era... tenure, I should say, in the Brett Veach era as the chief general manager. Could it happen again? The chances of that, we'll tell you next.